You can lie to a child with a smiling face. Tell me that color ain't about a race. You can cast the first stone. You can break my bones. But you're never gonna break. You're never gonna break my faith. So that is Aretha Franklin, Never Break My Faith. And I'd like to just go ahead and start off this episode with her because I find that so powerful and relevant to the stories that we're sharing here on the Radical Hope Project podcast. So welcome back to the Radical Hope Project podcast, your stop to listen in on our stories of resilience, advocacy, hope. I am your host, Vanessa Cervantes, and I'm so excited to be here today and again, already on our fifth episode. Isn't that wild? We're here to store these stories of equity, diversity, and solidarity at Cal State Long Beach and its surrounding areas. So we will tackle conversations and just essentially provide a space for students, staff, anybody in the community that wants to come in and share their story of advocacy, of resiliency. We want to learn and grow from each other, foster unity among each other, and provide solidarity among one another. So today is really special because our guest is a staunch advocate for education. She advocates for her students, never gives up on them. She wears her heart on her sleeve. She's a cat mama and a fellow colleague with me at the Cal State University Long Beach Masters of Social Work program here. And I want to welcome Angelica Uriata to the podcast. Hello, my friend.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
I typically call you Angie. Is that okay?
Yes. So my name is Angelica Urrutia. I typically go by Angie. Yeah. Angelica, Angie, totally fine. I answer to both.
Okay. Beautiful. I should have said it in Spanish too, because the way that you just mentioned it, I was like, oh, you're right. I should have said Angelica because that sounds appropriate, right? That's the way to say it. So welcome.
Thank you.
We're so excited to have you here on the Radical Hope Project podcast. I do want to start this off by like defining a little bit about what's been happening throughout these last couple of weeks and these last episodes. So I feel like I keep throwing out the word counter storytelling, right? And a lot of people who do know what it is or don't know what it is just want to define it. Because one of the goals of this podcast is essentially to provide a space, right? This is a space where we want to hold these stories and we want to be able to communicate these stories of adversity, injustice through the lens of the person who's living it, right? So we're holding these stories and that's essentially what counter storytelling is, to allow the person who's living through the moment to then be able to talk about it. And that way you're giving your perspective, you're giving your truth into what you've lived through and how you've been able to move through it. So today, I want to talk to you, Angie, about what has been happening. Tell us a little bit about your story, if you would like.
Absolutely. So today, I just want to touch base on like my why and the reason why I'm here and why I do what I do, yes, why I'm in the program. And so many of you have probably heard it. I know, Vanessa, you have.
Yes.
But for anyone who's a new listener or doesn't know me and wants to know, like, my why, it stems from childhood, basically. Mm-hmm. I grew up with, like, no role models, no positive role models. School was, like, my safe space, which is why I, like, I'm such a big advocate for, like, education and why my heart is in that place. But, you know, my mom immigrated here 1 month before I was born.
No way.
Yes. So she got here at like 8 months pregnant, and then I was born from Mexico.
Okay.
Both of my parents are from Michoacan.
Me too.
So hello. Just even that, I'm like, oh my God, like, I thank her for that, because I don't know what my life could be if, you know, I was undocumented. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would have the same opportunities that I have now. Mm-hmm. So that's insane to me. But we grow up, like, low socioeconomic status, my parents, like, living paycheck to paycheck, my dad, you know, I think his coping mechanisms were drugs and alcohol. And there was domestic violence. My mom cheated on my dad, and then she would like leave with her affair partners for months at a time. And we wouldn't see her. I'm also the oldest of four kids. So I spent my childhood raising my three younger siblings, you know. So school to me was like the space where I could get away from everything that was chaos at home, from all of my adult responsibility as a child. So for me growing up, that was like so challenging. I didn't know where I was going to go. I didn't know if I was just going to be another statistic of maybe another child who grew up this way, who didn't get to graduate high school, didn't seek college, didn't have opportunities. You know, my mom was a teen mom. I could have been that statistic too. And I chose not to be. I chose to be resilient. I chose to come out strong on the other end. And I wanted to set an example for my siblings. I always tell myself that my parents taught me a lot about what I don't want to be in as an adult and who I wouldn't want to be as a parent. If I ever chose to have kids, because that's still, I don't know, that's up in the air. But I wanted to be a good role model for my younger siblings and just show them like, hey, like we can do this, we can get out of it. And I feel like I've done a good job so far. But I've been working in education for like the last 10 years and I love it. I love the challenging cases with students who I can relate to and those kids who maybe don't have a positive role model in their life. Those kids who might not have access to food at home or access to basic needs and come to school just to have a meal. So I love connecting with those students and being able to support them and help them and give them a safe space where they can be who they are. And that's why I'm here.
Yeah. And Angie, thinking back to what you're sharing, what do you think it was that kind of pushed you to choose falling into a different path?
I didn't want to stay in the same cycle, honestly. Like, I saw how much we struggled, you know, financially. We were also, like, facing homelessness for a while. I will say, while I worked through my bachelor's degree, we were living in a motel. Like, that's how challenging it was. And I remember so many evictions as a kid. The biggest one that stood out to me was one day when I was coming home from, like, school, and all of our belongings were just, like, out on the street. And my parents were like, yeah, we've been struggling. We couldn't pay rent. They kicked us out. And so they literally left all of our belongings, literally just grabbed, like, a few items of clothing, shoes, school backpack, and that was it. Like, we were off. And so growing up, living in other people's homes, always sharing space, having no privacy, I didn't want that for my older self. That's not something that I would want to provide to like a child if I had one. So I wanted more stability. I wanted freedom. I wanted privacy. And so for me, that was like huge, you know. And I told myself, like, if I follow the pattern that my parents have and what they're giving us, I'm not going to become a better person. I'm going to be stuck here. And so for me, it was just like, I want to get out of this space. And I have achieved that already. So I do have some resentment towards them that I've worked on. But I know that they were also trying to do the best with the circumstances that they have. Just because my dad worked the labor jobs, he wasn't making a lot of money. My mom's undocumented. She's illiterate. She can't read. She can't write. Even for her, she would get ripped off looking for cash-paying jobs. People would take advantage of that. And there's not much she could do because she's undocumented. So just seeing them, like, down all the time, I wanted to rise up above that and hope to one day be able to give them something better.
Yeah. Was there anyone, like a mentor that you may have had or anything like that?
My teachers.
Your teachers.
I had teachers who absolutely loved me. I got myself so involved in school activities. So I was the first one at school, like every morning. I'd be there before 7 in the morning. I was in ASB, honor classes. I joined every club I could. I joined every after school sports that I could. I was getting home like 5-ish just to avoid being home overall. Do homework and go to bed. Like, that was pretty much what I would do through my entire school life career.
Okay. And with your siblings as well, is that something that they continue to follow?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I know. As much as I try to be like a role model, I think, you know, we all seek comfort in different places. Yes. I found my comfort through school, through education, through my teachers who were there. One of my brothers found comfort through gang involvement. Mm. And so he did get involved in that. But like the way I see it is that's the family that he found at the time.
Right.
And I can't judge or blame him for any of that. That was what maybe felt safe and available to him at the time. Mm-hmm. And so even just having those experiences of him almost losing his life twice to gang violence, you know, it's sad. It's really sad. It's challenging. It breaks my heart for his safety. But also, it just sucks overall because where did we fail? You know, and that's not mm-hmm. something that he deserved to have gone through, regardless of the choices that he's made. I would have wished something different for him.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as a sister, you're probably the one that's like, okay, you can only do so much. You can be there for your siblings or your family. And then from there, where do you go? Right? Everybody else kind of makes their own decisions. But I do want to just circle back to your mother being undocumented and then your dad working these jobs. It makes me think of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Circling back to a human behavior class and how a child that doesn't meet the basic needs is like, you can't really go up to the self-actualization piece of the pyramid if your needs at the bottom aren't being met first, right?
Exactly.
Is that how you kind of, like, now that you know about these theories, do you kind of, like, look through those?
Yes. Uh-huh. I think that's a big theory that's stuck to me, mm-hmm. Which I actually have conversations with students at internship with. Mm. I bring out now my printed copies of the pyramid. I'm like, this is where I see that you're stuck. What can we do to meet your needs so that you can move up?
Yeah.
And just it. I feel so mind-blown when I look at it that way. I think I also get stuck with, like, critical race theory and intersectionality with just the way that we grew up. Yeah. Even your storytelling right now, that's all I was thinking, critical race theory. Yeah. And, yeah, intersectionality, because there's so many things that are happening that are stopping us. They make it or break it for you.
Right. And I think a lot of times we're fed this narrative that it's our fault. It's your fault if you're not pulling yourself up by the bootstraps and like hitting the ground running. It's a lot of times that it's these systems that are built for us to not succeed and to feel like we're in this space where, like, no matter how hard you try, maybe it's still not going to be enough because these systems are built that way. Yeah. What kind of things do you do for the students that you serve?
A lot of advocacy. Okay. A lot of it. Where, you know, we're networking with different parts of the school, different even community, outside community resources, whether it's mental health or just recreational with the city to see what we could do for our students. So I know that we partner with, like, the city for now summertime that's coming up for our students to have, like, activities and outings that they can go to for free so that they're not at home or they're not engaging in maybe unsafe activities. Mm-hmm. So that's a big one. It's also just being that person, creating that safe space for a student to come and tell you what they're struggling with. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll take snacks because maybe you're just hungry and you can't focus because there's a need. And it's such a basic need, but if it's not met, it's like in your head. Mm-hmm. And I can't focus because I'm hungry. I'm angry because I'm hungry. Mm-hmm. And so having snacks, providing that safe space, allowing my students to be themselves, to play the music that they like because other people might not like it. Mm-hmm. And then I provide recommendations on other things that they should listen to.
You're like, have you listened to this person? What recommendations are you giving right now?
I have a student that was really into the emo type music right now. So like Pierce the Veil, screamo bands. Which and is? I told her to listen to Motionless in White and A Day to Remember because they're my favorite bands. So just being able to relay and really build that, like, genuine connection with them.
Yeah.
I love it. That's my favorite part.
And you're so good at it, too. I know the one story that's always, like, sticking with me is that story about the Jolly Ranchers. Like, the tiniest thing you would think, well, it's just a Jolly Rancher to any other person. But to that one student, it meant the world that you remember it that. I can't imagine, Angie. I can't imagine what it would have been like to feel like the one that has the responsibility to push your family through, when you look back, what about your story do you feel like you keep with you to continue to push you through adversity, and especially now with everything that's going on?
I feel like all of it. Okay. Like, yes, I definitely struggled with depression and anxiety as a teenager, and so many times I thought, I'm not going to make it. Like, it just keeps getting harder and harder and harder. But I'm so resilient. When I look back, I'm like, I did it. And I feel like I'm in such a good place where I feel happiness and I feel proud of myself. And I'm fulfilling my dreams. Mm-hmm. And it didn't come easy. You know, I did go through my own therapy. I have let go of a lot of the anger that I had. I have good friends that will let me vent to them and talk to them, and they will see me cry and they're okay with it. And I have learned so many coping skills through therapy and through this program, because I started both of them at the same time. Mm-hmm. And everything just resonates, everything relates, that as difficult as my childhood was, I'm grateful I had it, because I wouldn't be the person I am today if I hadn't had those experiences.
Mm. That is so beautiful. What would you say to somebody listening right now that they are in this circumstance, or like a younger person going through seeing their parents not being their best, or seeing their siblings not choosing what you would want for them? What would you tell that person?
As cliche as it sounds, seek the help and know that things do get better. You know, we might be so afraid to seek help because there's so many things that we could potentially lose. But if I could be honest, there's so many times that I wish my parents would have divorced, because it would have taken us out of being exposed to so much violence and neglect. So to me, that's a big one. And then seeking the help, just having someone to talk to. Mm-hmm. There's so many ways to go around it, and there are resources at school, outside in the community, where you can have that. Seek a positive role model, whether it's a teacher, a coach, a friend, a friend's family. Mm-hmm. I was taken in by my best friend's family as a child. Wow. My childhood best friend and her family would feed me. They would let me sleep over when I was having it rough and didn't want to be home. Mm-hmm. There are people out there. And I know a lot of us culturally, and especially boys, have been conditioned to don't say anything, suppress your emotions.
Yeah.
Boys don't cry. And it's okay to cry. It's okay to let it out. It's okay to talk about it, because the more we suppress it, the harder it gets. And that's when we explode.
Yeah. And maybe that's the time where you do end up choosing something that might not be as helpful.
Exactly.
Opposed to just talking about it.
So just talk, whether it's talking to someone verbally, maybe writing it, find a way to cope. Mm-hmm. And things do get better, as cliche as it sounds. They do.
I don't think it's as cliche. I think it's your truth. And I feel like it's so beautiful, Angie, because I see you in class and I hear your stories, right? And they're always stories about how you truly believe in the students that you serve. You truly believe in being there and having that connection, building that rapport with them. And you don't take it for granted. Like, you take it very seriously.
Yes.
That is what makes you and will continue to make you such a powerhouse in this field.
Thank you.
Because that passion is there. And with that passion, it's difficult to sway somebody the other way, right? Even on those really hard days that you want to give up, because this field is so emotionally hard, right?
Yes, it's overwhelming.
Yeah. Where sometimes you're like, I just want to go get like a different degree where I could do something else, because it does take a piece of your heart. It really does. And I like in the beginning of your intro, I was like, I need to say this piece that she wears her heart on her sleeve, because that's what I see every single time.
Absolutely, I do. I see a part of myself in every student and every family that I've worked with so far, because I'm in the place where these are the families that I want to serve.
Yeah.
And I see so much resiliency. I see so much strength. I see so much positive in them, even when they don't see it in themselves. And so I do a lot of affirmations because I want to, one, I want to make myself feel good, but I want my students to feel good. I want them to see what I see in them. And sometimes we're just so clouded by the negativity that we forget that there's a light at the end of that tunnel.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about affirmations with them, are they kind of like, that's so cheesy, like, I don't want to do that? Or what's the reaction that you usually receive?
They look at me like, girl, you crazy. I'm like, I know. I was like, I know you're going to feel silly doing it at first,
yeah.
But it really works. And so one of the biggest things, I think, when I introduce the affirmations is for them to tell me, like, three things that they like about themselves. And they have such a difficult time where I can come up with a list of, like, 10 mm-hmm. immediately. Like, mm-hmm. this is what I love about you. This is what I see about you. And with them, it's like, no, they're like, it's easier for them to name things that they dislike.
Yeah.
And I just get so shocked, but we practice those affirmations.
Yeah.
And I will sit with them in silence until they can tell me three things that they like about themselves, because, no, they're amazing humans.
Yeah. And you see the potential in them. And I feel like, could it be that the reason why they can't really name, I think it's just like, I don't want to speak for everyone, but at least for me, it's really hard to think of, let me think of three things that are really cool about myself. Because could it be that the people or like the society that we're around is so focused on, it's just never enough. Like, you got to keep going. You got to keep going. It has to be better. You got to make more money. You got to, you know, reach higher levels, and it's never enough just where you are.
Yeah, and social media is a big one too.
Yeah.
With physical appearance and all that. And I think that's where most of my students go, because personality-wise, they can name things, but if it's a physical aspect, they have more challenges.
Social media is just harmful as it is impactful, because I believe in the power of social media to do good, right? But you do see the impact that it has, especially on the younger generation. Well, Angie, I want to just end and wrap up with one final question for you. After sharing your beautiful story, which we can talk about for days, we're already at 22 minutes. What is radical hope to you?
I think it's connection and facing adversity, but also challenging the norm. And I say this with, my dad used to tell me not to seek higher education and just to drop out and get a good paying job. And I think I have built myself up by challenging that.
Yeah.
And I did the exact opposite. And look where I'm at now.
Yeah. Look at you. You're literally in your almost third year of your master's program.
Along with you, yes.
Yeah.
Can you believe it? Oh, my God.
I love it. That makes me feel like you're such a badass. Like, yes, Angie. Well, we thank you so much for being here on the podcast. You're always welcome to come in and sit with us. I thank you from the bottom of my heart for sharing your beautiful story. What I see in front of me is a badass woman that has been through the unimaginable, but she is here with a smiling face and her eyeliner that never quits. She is always rocking that eyeliner.
Thank you.
But you are powerful, and I am so grateful to have met you and have you on this platform right now, Angie.
Thank you so much.
Yes,
I appreciate the opportunity.
Of course. Well, everyone, thank you so much for listening. As always, you know that you can find the Radical Hope Project podcast everywhere, on Apple, on Spotify, and as well as you can find our Instagram. We now have a link tree, actually. So if you go to the Instagram, it's going to take you to the link tree, which will provide the website. It's going to provide you where you can find the podcasts. Instagram, it is the Radical Hope Project. And remember, no matter how tough things get, stay radically hopeful, because the future is shaped by those who dare to believe in it. So until next time, keep dreaming, keep doing, and keep believing.